Hello and welcome to an emergency college football experience podcast. My name is David Capel. I'm joined by Kent Brown. Kent, yesterday, Sunday, we're sitting down watching college football in separate places, but texting back and forth about Lincoln Riley going to USC, and you said, do you want to do an emergency podcast? We decided, we can wait till Tuesday. We'll do it our regular time. And then I'm on a run tonight, and you send me a text saying, smoke, there's fire. Notre Dame's Brian Kelly is going to LSU. And then we said, well, I mean, I just got the coach of my dreams. You just lost the most coach with the most wins in program history at your Notre Dame Fighting Irish. So we had to get on to do an emergency podcast. Crazy. This has got to be the craziest coaching carousel in a very long time. You just look at it and you see Florida, USC, LSU, Notre Dame, Ohio, or excuse me, Oklahoma, all open at some point in the same year. Washington as well, you know, the trickle down of TCU and SMU, all of that is just crazy. So how are you doing? Let's start going over some of your thoughts.
I'm very surprised. I mean, it's one of those deals where you look at Brian Kelly's success. He was great at Notre Dame. I loved him as a coach there. I still am going to look back at his time with a lot of positives. The timing is the weirdest part of it, because Notre Dame is in a position next Sunday they very well might be in the college football playoff. And it's not even that, if you look at it, it's not that inconceivable. All they need is Bama to probably lose to Georgia, which right. is favored to happen, and then one of Cincinnati, Oklahoma State, or Michigan to lose. Now, they're all favored, but all three of them winning, if you did a money line parlay with those three teams, it would be plus 110.
Okay, Kent, let's take a step back, look at the 10,000-foot view, and we'll talk specifically about Notre Dame and USC and what state they are now left in with where they're at. Notre Dame a little harder to talk about with without their coach being hired yet. But let's talk – what I want to start with is you have two programs in USC and LSU that go out and grab coaches that both have been in playoffs multiple times in the last 5 years, and they throw the bag at them. Obviously, the money is just out of control for coaches right now. But these are programs that are down, and I know LSU just won the national championship 2 years ago, but they have fallen from grace. They fired that coach less than 2 years later in the middle of a season. So they're down relatively. How are they able to go in and grab, you know, two of the top five or six coaches in the NCAA and bring them to their program other than just throwing massive piles of money at them?
I don't know. It's weird because when you look at just this whole breakdown of all these college coaches and everything else that's happening now, is it seems like there's very few programs now that you could say feel good about where their coach is and knowing their coach will stay. You know, if you look at it,
Oklahoma.
Yeah, Oklahoma and Notre Dame have been two of the only five programs that have gone to multiple playoffs. Now, neither coach ever won a playoff game, and I'm sure that is in the back of each coach's mind, where Lincoln Riley was close but not quite there, Brian Kelly close but not quite there. But nonetheless, those are two programs I think most people would have said, man, that coach is never leaving or not leaving anytime soon. And instead, it's the boatloads of money. It's the possibilities of what's on the other side. The grass on the other side is greener. It's an odd deal, and I also look at the whole agent thing being very bizarre, because Trace Armstrong is the agent for both Brian Kelly and Lincoln Riley, and when you look at it, and I know it was specifically worded on the questions, but last week Brian Kelly was asked, there are people talking about you to USC, can you squash those rumors? And Brian Kelly said, I'm not going to USC. Mike Tomlin said it best, you'll never say never, but I would need a $250 million type of offer to consider something like that, and I'd have to have my wife sign off on it. You notice he was never asked about LSU, so he denied USC. And then Lincoln Riley Saturday night loses Bedlam. He's asked about the LSU job and saying a lot of things have been weird this week. There's been some tensions. Are you taking the LSU job? And he said, I will not be the next coach of LSU. Next question. You notice he never mentioned USC. So you had the same agent working both sides of this. Now, a lot of people are claiming, and I would like to find out more about this, that like everything fell into Lincoln Riley's lap on Sunday morning. And everything for Brian Kelly fell into his lap this afternoon.
No chance.
That just can't be the case.
Well, and think, look at it this way too, Kent. These two programs have had a fired coach or knowing they're firing their coach at the end of the season for the last 2 months.
Right.
This guy's been working behind the scenes.
Right, and there's no way. What they probably were told is, we're not leaving yet, but let's see how things play out. And then, of course, Brian Kelly finishes the season against Stanford. He doesn't have a game coming up this week. And Lincoln sure. Riley loses Bedlam, so he doesn't have a game this week. That does make things a little easier for both coaches. Again, the timing is off because Brian Kelly could potentially make the playoff. If they lost to Virginia Tech in week six and they were 10-2 and closed strong, this would make a little bit more sense to me because they wouldn't be in the playoff mix and they would just be a Fiesta Bowl or Peach Bowl team. Instead, though, that's the weird thing about this. And Brian Kelly, after the Alabama national title game in 2012, that same week, as soon as he lost that game, he interviewed for the Philadelphia Eagles job. He didn't actually get the job. It went to Chip Kelly. But that was something that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. Brian Kelly has rehabbed himself at Notre Dame over the years, clearly. But I would imagine tonight what probably happened is he probably or his agent went to a counter offer with the Notre Dame athletic director. And the AD probably politely said, we're not doing this again. Like, take your offer and it's time because you can't keep doing this all the time. I mean, this is year 12. He went 4-8. They kept him around. He's been exceptional since. But if LSU is going to offer him $14 million or something crazy like that, Notre Dame's probably, and look, Notre Dame has a lot of money, but at some point there is a principal factor. It's like, well, if you don't want to be here, then I don't know what else to tell you.
Sure.
And on the other hand, and on the other hand too, to be fair, I don't know that many people that wouldn't take a $14 million job if they're making seven. I think that's pretty common for a lot of people to take a job where they're doubling their money. It just so happens this is a public eye where we see the guy. There's fans that think he's like family or friends, and that rubs people the wrong way. But
sure.
I get it. There's a lot of people that would do that. And again, LSU's last three coaches have won a national championship. It's not like he's going to a job where you can't win. The difference is he's 60 years old. I thought he might retire in 3 or 4 years. And, you know, he was on the Move the Sticks podcast a couple weeks ago with my old coworkers, Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. And he joked about, yeah, in a few years when I retire, I'll be taking it easy. I'll be golfing all the time, drinking Mai Tais. And that is the complete opposite of what the LSU job is. You cannot take it easy. You cannot have one day to relax, to golf and drink Mai Tais. If you're drinking as the LSU head coach, you're doing it because you need to calm yourself down, not because you're relaxing. So he's yeah. taking arguably the highest pressure job there is in the country.
Right. Well, and that's the thing is, you know, it is a high pressure job. The last three coaches have won national championships and two of them have been fired.
Yeah.
So it's not like you can go and retire there on one ring. You're going to go there and you're going to get a ring and then they're going to expect another ring the next year. But so let's talk about I don't want to call him the odd man out. It's an interesting hire, but Billy Napier going to Florida. That was announced yesterday as well, or maybe late Saturday night. Quick turnaround. They just fired Mullen a couple weeks ago. It's not the flashiest hire, but it seems like a solid hire. Napier's done great things in the group of five. What do you think for Florida, which, you know, likes to think of itself as on the level of LSU or USC, whether it is or isn't, is a whole nother conversation. Spoiler, it isn't. They aren't. But they are up there. They are a powerhouse in the SEC. They have been traditionally for the last 20 years. What do you think about that Billy Napier hire?
I like it. I think if you look at Napier, he got the head coaching job at Louisiana and has been exceptional. And if you look at his job before that, he was with Alabama as an analyst, then became a tight ends coach at Florida State when they won the national title. He was part of a national championship level program there. Then he went to Alabama, was part of a couple national championships there as a wide receivers coach, is known as a great recruiter. You know, he's the guy. A lot of people talk about Alabama's high-end recruiting. Billy Napier went into Florida as the receivers coach and brought in Calvin Ridley, brought in Jerry Jeudy. He was the guy recruiting those guys. So, you know, I look at Billy Napier and I say, I think Florida got a really nice hire. He's a proven head coach at this point. I know it's in the Sun Belt, and he's also a proven recruiter that can recruit that state and go up against SEC and ACC powers and win those recruiting battles. So I think on the surface, Florida landed with a pretty good head coach. And I always thought Dan Mullen was an underrated head coach as an X's and O's guy, and he was a great quarterback's coach, but he wasn't known as this sharp recruiter the way that other coaches are and the way Kirby Smart clearly is in the SEC East. So I think overall I'd grade the Napier hire to be, you know, an A or an A minus at worst. And look, I don't know if he becomes Urban Meyer or Spurrier and wins a title, But I think worst case, he's kind of what Mullen was, where Mullen's like winning 9 or 10 games fairly often. So I don't think he's going to be Will Muschamp or Jim McElwain.
Well, and what do you think? Do you think that – I think it's a smart hire in that USC and LSU win immediately. I mean, USC has a little bit of runway yes. because of how down they've been. Billy Napier, it's come in, build this program back up. You know, it's a – you could look at Billy Napier and say, okay, in year three, we're expecting you to be competing for the national championship. I don't think necessarily – next year, they're expecting him to compete for the national championship. LSU, they're expecting Brian Kelly to get them to the national championship next year.
Yeah, the other thing, too, is because of the transfer portal, anything is potential. Anything is possible. When you look at some of these programs, like, for instance, I've been hearing the last week or so as a Notre Dame fan that Isaiah Foskey is probably going to come back for his senior year. I was hearing Jarrett Patterson was probably going to come back for his senior year, or his fifth year, I should say. Those are two future NFL starters that Notre Dame could have back. What if both of those guys go to LSU with Brian Kelly? I'm not saying it'll happen, but they're able to. You're allowed a one-time
Spencer
transfer
Rattler
now.
Went into the portal.
Right. What if, look at Oklahoma, there's guys that might follow to USC. What if Napier is able to convince some high-end players at certain schools to take them in and bring them in? The transfer portal does open up a little bit more than the old school way of, even if there's like an upset freshman, like Notre Dame, and I'm not saying that this will happen, but like Lorenzo Styles is a guy, he's now starting at receiver as a true freshman at Notre Dame because of all their injuries. You know, he sent out a tweet tonight saying SMH. You know, he's upset. He's shaking his head. His brother's a five-star recruit who's going to Ohio State in a year. Maybe he leaves the program. If he stays at Notre Dame, that doesn't hurt them much. But in the old days, he would have to just suck it up and stay. Otherwise, you're a third-year sophomore at a program as opposed to a third-year junior who's off to the NFL. Now that does factor in quite a bit. So I think you look at LSU and you look at Florida, and both programs with the right transfers and with the right coaching could be very good. But I'm with you. Florida next year, the expectation is just – Get closer.
You
get closer to beating Georgia, or find a way to get in like the top six, top eight. You're right though about LSU. Their expectations next year are going to be win the SEC West, win the SEC, and win the national championship. And now that's not to say if they don't go 11-1 that there won't be some happy people, but there will still be a lot of upset people.
Right. Yeah. And they'll be like, hey, you know, you signed you up for this. We're paying you millions of dollars. All right. Let's talk about a little bit more of some of the trickle down before we get to breaking down Notre Dame and USC at the end. UW, Washington hires away Mike DeBoer from Fresno State. That's a nice hire for them. There was some rumors of Matt Campbell to Washington that seemed not lateral. Washington is a better program than Iowa State, but you know, he was being named in every job that came up, and all of a sudden for him to go to Washington didn't make a ton of sense. I like this Fresno State hire for Washington. And then TCU planning on naming Dykes, SMU planning on naming Lashley after Dykes is gone. You know, kind of start setting the lower trickle downs. But really, let's talk about Oklahoma. So Lincoln Riley comes in, you know, everyone's like, oh, he came in with completely stacked. They were fine. It was time for Stoops to go. He was still recruiting well, but he wasn't getting the most out of those guys. And he did really pump that program up pretty quickly. Lots of big games in that time. Goes to the playoff a couple of times. As you said, didn't win a game. Pretty strong against Texas, though. How does he leave them, and where do you see that program going?
Yeah, I think Oklahoma's still in really good shape just because they never have down periods. Oklahoma was somewhat down in the 90s, and Bob Stoops turned them around. But remember, even then, Bob Stoops did win a national title in his second season, which meant the cupboard wasn't bare when he took over. Lincoln Riley's an interesting one because philosophy-wise and coaching-wise and his age, it's extremely impressive. However, though, when you look at what he did at OU, you could make an argument that he didn't necessarily take them to a next step compared to what Stoops had them. Remember, Stoops is the one that recruited Mayfield and brought him in. He recruited Kyler Murray and brought him in. Lincoln Riley went out and got Jalen Hurts. Hurts didn't necessarily get better as that year went on. And he did get crushed in the playoffs against LSU 2 years ago. And, you know, lost to a Georgia team in the Rose Bowl close. But it wasn't like Oklahoma was necessarily, you know, a top two program the way Clemson and Bama have been. I still think
Right.
Lincoln Riley did a great job there. I think he's going to do an outstanding job at USC. And but I don't necessarily like if you're just going to say to me between Kelly and Riley, which of the two turned around their program way more? Clearly the answer is Brian Kelly, but the
Sure.
difference is Lincoln Riley is very smart in this regard. The SEC is coming up for Oklahoma.
Yep.
And Oklahoma might very well be the best program or the second best program in the SEC in 3 or 4 years, or they might just be the fourth or fifth best program, which would
in
mean,
the West.
Yeah.
In
well,
the West.
If there's even a West and East.
Yeah,
or whatever divisions end up being or pods.
Yeah.
But the thing is, he goes to USC right now. Instantly, USC becomes a top two program in that conference.
Right.
And recruiting-wise, he's not competing as much with Nick Saban, with Kirby Smart, with Jimbo Fisher, with Dabo Swinney, with Billy Napier, with
right.
Josh Heupel. He's going or with Brian Kelly now. He's going into a conference and a group out west that he was already getting the top kids out west. Now it's like,
exactly.
stay
now
here.
Now just tell him stay home.
Yeah, stay here. And on top of it, pretty easy division. I understand. I got to give Whittingham credit. Whittingham is the king of that division so far and the elder statesman. But let's be real. What Lincoln Riley should be able to do should put him ahead of Kyle Whittingham. And then the other thing about it, too, is we're pretty soon to probably being in a 12-team playoff, where Lincoln Riley now doesn't even necessarily have to be one of the best four programs to get in. He just has to be good enough to win the Pac-12, and now he can reload USC. Probably the first couple years, if they get in that playoff, they're probably in that 5-12 range, but that's a lot better than where they've been, and I think that's a good selling point. So I think, yeah, Lincoln Riley's an A-plus hire. Brian Kelly's an A-plus hire.
I want to say, what is where do you think Oklahoma ends up – coaching wise, I know it's speculation, but
Mark Stoops is my guess. I'll say Mark Stoops comes in. Mark Stoops has a good track record with Kentucky. He is a Stoops brother, which will help. Obviously, Bob would sign off on that, and I think that would be a pretty good hire. And even though he never coached there, you know, it was Mike Stoops who came in as DC. Mark always did his own thing with Florida and Miami and Florida State.
Yeah, right, yeah.
But I would think Mark Stoops is a pretty likely candidate to go there. Also, it's interesting now, but maybe Matt Campbell has done pretty well in the Big 12 without that recruiting footprint. What if he wants the SEC job, but also wants to kind of stay in that Texas region? That could be an attractive coach, too. So those are kind of two names that pop out to me. I think, though, if I'm Oklahoma, no, I go different coordinator. My guy would be, if it's not Mark Stoops, and maybe you don't go that route, Dan Lanning, the defensive coordinator at Georgia right now. Ace recruiter, D coordinator for Kirby Smart, is coordinating the best unit, is going to win the Broyles Award probably. And he was a recruiting coordinator at age 27 at Memphis. And then he went and coached with Todd Graham at Pitt. He was at Memphis. He was at Arizona State in his 20s as a position coach. He's like I think he's 34 or 35 years old. If that's your guy, remember, they hired Bob Stoops when he was an ace defensive coordinator for Steve Spurrier in the early, you know, in the late 90s. Dan Lanning is a guy that's not getting a lot of love. And also, if you're going to go to the SEC, what's a better way to hurt another SEC program than to take their arguably best recruiter who's the D coordinator at Georgia? So it's kind of like you hurt Georgia at the same time of helping yourself. So I'm not saying that will happen, but that is a guy that's not really being mentioned at all right now. But I think it's fairly likely that Dan Lanning is going to have a pretty good job very quickly. And that might be
How much does OU think they need to make a splashy hire, though?
A lot less than other programs, because OU is kind of like Ohio State in many regards, where no matter who the coach is, the program seems to sell itself. You know, I'm kind of stealing a line from Andy Staples here. He said this on his podcast. He said Ohio State's been the only recession-proof program in the AP, in the AP era. They've never had a downtime. He said Oklahoma's the second
now,
most
don't
recession-proof.
Tell that to Luke Fickell.
Well, that was a one-year deal.
Yeah, 1 year at 6-6.
But Oklahoma's, and he said Oklahoma second, and I kind of agree with that. Oklahoma has never really had like a down decade in their program's history, and a lot of that is there's just the top to bottom consistency across the board. So what you can go and get a Dan Lanning, and people might not recognize him if he's eating at a barbecue in Norman right now, but you better believe within 2 or 3 years, Dan Lanning is going to be a major head coach somewhere. And you saw what Oklahoma did with Lincoln Riley. When Bob Stoops retired, he handpicked Riley as his guy to come up. Lincoln Riley was not a guy that was getting a lot of big time offers at that point. They trusted him 3, 4 years in advance, and it paid off. Who's to say that Lanning's not that guy? And much like Notre Dame right now with Marcus Freeman, they might look at him that same way and say, this guy's going to be a big time head coach. He's already here. Do we
Let's
miss
keep
out on
him.
this? So.
Yeah, let's okay, let's start to narrow in a little bit. Let's talk about we talked about what is OU going to do? What is Notre Dame going to do now? That's a big vacancy, but it's one of the biggest caveat vacancies. It's Notre Dame, it's Stanford. You got to recruit smart guys as well. You're hampered by that. You can't just go get the fastest guy. He's also got to have a decent GPA. It's a hard place to be successful at, and I think you guys are now in year 12 of Brian Kelly. I know it's all ending now, but you probably look back and say, yeah, that was really successful. We're happy with what he did there. Two a national championship appearance, two playoff appearances. That's about. I don't want to say that's the ceiling. I do think Notre Dame can still win a national championship, but that's as close to coming to the ceiling without summiting as you can.
Yeah, Notre Dame, I think the biggest thing with them right now, it's really been that Brian Kelly has been in this era where there's been two, and then Ohio State is a third major power. I know The Athletic did a really good article in the offseason where they looked at the history of college football, and there's never been two teams for a decade as dominant as Bama and Clemson were. Notre Dame could have potentially been that third team a lot of years, and the problem is they just had to go up against those teams all the time. And recruiting wise, Brian Kelly's done well, but he's not bringing in top five classes. I do think that that would be the next step, is you need to look at somebody that not only knows how to coach, but maybe can take that next step. And instead of Notre Dame, like when they played Alabama last year in the college football playoff, Notre Dame had 2 5-star players, Bama had 21. That's a big difference. Now, when Notre
You can only
Dame,
put 11 guys on the field at a
yeah,
time.
and one of those players was a true freshman tight end in Michael Mayer. And another one was actually, a right guard. It's not like it was an elite receiver the way Devontae Smith and those guys were. And so that's a big difference. And you notice that. You don't notice that as much during the regular season because Notre Dame can get away with beating a USC team coached by Clay Helton, a North Carolina team that has nice weapons but not an overall great team. ACC schools that on paper have nice players but they're not elite talents. But when they went up against Bama, when they went up against Georgia, when they went up against Clemson for the most part, they lost those games. And I think for Notre Dame right now, you look at a guy like Luke Fickell. The only problem is with Luke Fickell, he's also heading towards a playoff if he wins, and that would be pretty weird for him to leave Cincinnati. Like Brian Kelly lost, he left Cincinnati undefeated, but he did it knowing that they weren't in the BCS title game. Luke Fickell, I can't see him leaving. It just doesn't seem like to me the type of guy that's leaving Cincinnati if he's in the playoff. I
Well, what's
think.
funny is he could tank it and then go take the Notre Dame job. He could lose the game against against Houston this weekend and then go take his Notre Dame job with a clear conscience.
And not only take the Notre Dame job, could technically coach them in the playoff.
In the playoff, exactly. He's like, I'm going to the playoff one way or the other.
Yeah, well, that's that. First of all, that would be like the biggest heel move ever, is if he's in his post-game presser and he goes up to the podium and he goes, I saw that Alabama had lost to Georgia, so I knew with us losing this game, I was going to be in the playoff. And somebody would go, "What?" And he'd go, "Yeah, I'm now the new coach. Yeah, I'm the new coach of Notre Dame, and we're in." And that would be his way out. Like just the amount of people. Like he might not like that would be back to back Cincinnati coaches who would leave. I don't know, but I think right now he's certainly in the mix. And if they do lose to Houston, then I think he would be way more inclined to consider it. Matt Campbell has to be in the mix. Midwest guy from Ohio, went to Mount Union, has been in that region a while, has done really well at Iowa State. I love him. Again, though, recruiting is his biggest question, but he's also coaching Iowa State. So how would we know how good of a recruiter he is?
Right.
And then the other thing is Marcus Freeman, who I brought up, he's the first year DC, played at Ohio State, coached at Cincinnati, and was a coach at Ohio State for a couple years. He's a guy that Notre Dame fans love right now. You know, right now they have like 3 5-star kids already signed for the future, all Marcus Freeman recruits. He's done a hell of a job as a D coordinator in year one, did great at Cincinnati. I look at him and say, I think Notre Dame might look at him and say, we believe in you. If you want to believe in us, we'll give you this opportunity. And that would stabilize the program. Because here's the interesting thing about Notre Dame, and I was talking to my older brother about this, who's been very critical of Brian Kelly over the years. But I said, this was supposed to be Notre Dame's rebuilding year. The next 2 years were supposed to be the years that they actually contended right. for something. And now you look at this roster.
Keep that continuity.
Yeah, now if you look at this roster, the big issue with whoever the next head coach is, that coach is going to be expected to win 20-plus games at the minimum in those 2 years. Because the roster's pretty stacked. This year's team was not. There were a lot of questions, and I thought if Notre Dame got to 10-2 this year, it would have been a near miracle. And instead, they're 11-1 and one upset away from going to the playoff potentially. But next year's team, they open up at Ohio State. They play Clemson. They have USC and Stanford and a bunch of other ACC schools. It's not an easy schedule. And then the following year, Notre Dame seemingly, like they're playing 7 freshmen on offense right now pretty consistently. The 2023 team on paper should be the best team that Notre Dame's had under Kelly, and now he's gone. So I wouldn't be surprised if they want to stabilize things. They want to believe in a young head coach. The only problem is, what if Ryan Day leaves Ohio State in a year or two to go to the NFL? Why would Marcus Freeman not be in that mix? But the problem is, I think Luke Fickell then becomes their obvious choice. But yeah, to me right now, I would say Marcus Freeman, probably the odds-on favorite just for the stability factor. And then the other question that's being brought up is, will he coach the bowl game? No. Brian Kelly's not coaching the bowl game. Like, he's not.
He's going to be somewhere in Texas recruiting kids.
You know what's hilarious, though, is, and I think he's the only coach I've ever seen do this, when Brian Kelly took the Cincinnati job when he left Central Michigan, he coached their bowl game that year. I've never seen that before.
Well, no, you know what? I was actually thinking about this on my run today. I feel like when the guys are ascending and it's like, you've done everything for the program and you gave us this undefeated season, like, we'll let you go out this way. It's when you're going lateral or, you know, you're spreading
I'm saying when Brian Kelly left Central Michigan, he got to Cincinnati, accepted the job like December 6th, and then coached their bowl game like 3 weeks later. You know, technically that was his first job as Cincinnati head coach. And a lot of that was he just wanted to, because, you know, a lot of guys get in and yet they go on the recruiting trail and they don't really go the day-to-day like bowl game stuff. He just jumped right in and said, yeah, I guess I'll see what this team's all about. I've never seen that since. That's very uncommon. Technically, LSU does have a bowl game coming up. So we'll see if Brian Kelly.
Coach O is not going to be there. So that's a. That'll be interesting. USC will not have a bowl game, and we'll get to them in a second. You did bring up one thing that I want to touch on, which is the NFL. The Raiders' job is open. We'll probably see another job or two come open. There's a historic college coach that's 2-9 right now by the name of Urban Meyer, who said his dream job would be Notre Dame. So do you think that the NFL plays into this? Like you said, maybe Ryan Day goes pro in a year or two, but anybody either promoting to the pros that's going to link and with some openings, or do you see, you know, potentially Urban Meyer heading back to the college ranks?
See, I would say with the Urban Meyer thing, it's a little bit more challenging just because I don't think at this point Notre Dame's really the fit the way that they were 15 years ago. I feel like now there's more baggage with him. He's older. He's not quite the up-and-coming.
There's more scandals.
Yeah, well, and he's not like the up-and-coming, like, energetic recruiter the way he was when he was, you know, in his 30s or whatever as the head coach. I would say, again, Ryan Day has to be on NFL list. Matt Campbell has turned down NFL opportunities. He very well might be headed towards an NFL job. And the fact that he hasn't taken another job, I don't know enough about Fickell. Something seems like he's probably more of a college coach to me than a pro coach. But Urban Meyer, I think if he were to part ways with Jacksonville, which very well might happen after the season, I could see him coming somewhere after next season, but I have a feeling he'll probably just do TV again for a year, or he'll just take a year off. I don't see.
I mean, you remember too, like, where were his, not dream jobs, but USC felt like a really good fit. Obviously, he's one of the most successful coaches ever at Florida that opened up. Now Notre Dame's opening up. It's like,
what if Herman has another down year? You know, Texas aren't going to be happy.
Herman? You mean Sark?
Oh, sorry. Yeah,
Herman already had his down year.
Sark, I should say.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. But the point is, like, those were his job. Those were the jobs that made the most sense for him, and now they're obviously going to hire long-term guys. So it's interesting to see that.
You know where Urban could go, though? How about this? What's Urban's undergrad? Cincinnati. What if Day ends up leaving in a year, Luke Fickell takes the Ohio State job, and now there's the Big 12 waiting to have some program come in and dominate, and guess who's there ready to go but Urban Meyer, and he gets to enter the Big 12 where his competition, there's no Lincoln Riley, he's gone. His competition is Dave Aranda, Dykes, who's now going
Steve
to TCU,
Sarkeesian.
Steve Sarkeesian, and then like the occasional, like, I mean, really his top competition is probably one of the new breed of Cincinnati, UCF, or Houston with Holgorsen. So that would actually make a lot of sense.
That would be great too. Time would be a flat circle. Fickell would get ousted at Ohio State for Urban, and then Fickell leaves Cincinnati, and Urban comes in.
Yeah.
That'd be great to see. Okay, let's so that's a little bit of the NFL talk. Let's now get to what I think is really some college football shifting news. You know, Notre Dame has been good. They will continue potentially to be good. Like you said, Oklahoma recession-proof in terms of it's always up no matter who its coach is. LSU just won a national championship. Florida's won one in the last decade.
I will say this, though. The one difference with Oklahoma and Notre Dame now, though, is, and this is why I think as of today, Notre Dame is still probably the more likely stable position, is just because of that SEC impending move for OU. Where as good as OU has been, going to the SEC could make them a much different program. Where whoever takes over at Notre Dame, nothing's really changing from the last 5 years till 3 years from now. Where at OU, it might work out where OU becomes the best program in the country, or as we said earlier, it might work out where they're the fifth or sixth best team on the western side of that conference. We just don't know that. Something tells me that won't happen.
But all that being said, USC is a top four name in college football. They've won a dozen national championships. They've been the preeminent power on the West Coast. And they've basically been an afterthought since 2007, 2008, really, since Pete Carroll left in 2010. They've had two good years, really. One of them was on a full sanctions year where they went 10-2, couldn't make a postseason. They did win a Rose Bowl in 2017. They did get smoked by Ohio State during a year or two later from there. So this is a team that has not really been relevant on the national championship radar in the better part of 15 years. And they go and hire a guy that's been to two playoffs. He's coming from a top five program. So really, there's not much more up this guy can go. And really, I mean, Kay, if you had asked me at the beginning of the season, after week two, Clay Helton fired, and you said, who are the guys that you want? I would have said Nick Saban, one. Lincoln Riley, two. Those guys are off the board. There's no chance they're going anywhere. Both of their teams are going to make the playoff this year, blah, blah, blah. You know, maybe Urban, three. Going down the list, Fickell, blah, blah, blah. But all of a sudden, middle of last week, I start hearing rumors he's interested. And this is, you know, leading up to that game. They then lose Bedlam. And then within 15 hours, he's the head coach of USC and he's getting on a PJ to come out here and flash the fight on. Crazy turn of events. Like we said with Notre Dame as well, this is not, you know, Saturday night in the making. This is definitely something where there's obviously been some stuff going on at Oklahoma that he thought, you know, maybe there's some greener pastures. But, you know, let's talk up to the hire now, where we're at, how, you know, put this in terms that you're a bit of a college football historian. Put this in terms of how big of a hire this is, and from power program to power program. You just don't see this.
No, exactly. That's the biggest thing is that we've never seen, and I guess LSU now, they're not a historic blue blood, but they're certainly a big power. The Notre Dame to LSU move today is close, but in terms of true blue blood programs, you've never seen one coach leave for another that wasn't like a coach who was disgraced or something like that. And even then, it
I
doesn't
mean,
happen.
right now, I think if I rank Alabama, Ohio State, Notre Dame, USC, Oklahoma, he went from 5 to 4. And 5 has been a lot better than 4 for the last 15 years.
Yeah, I would say that's fair. And then Michigan's probably the sixth team.
Sure.
In terms of Michigan is like the next team, but because they don't have the national championships, they don't quite get there with those other five, in my opinion. But yeah,
Right.
I would agree with that. He's gone from 5 to 4, or maybe you can say 5 to 2, 4 to 2, 3 to 2, whatever way you want to say it.
Right.
He's shifting around, and you can count those on one hand. And again, we've talked about though, the path to the playoff is so much better at USC than it is at
So much better.
Oklahoma. And that wasn't the case when Oklahoma was in the Big 12, but that's certainly the case going forward. And then we know local talent. There's worlds of talent out here that's wanting to stay home, that hasn't stayed home. And all of that has to do with the fact that they're going to play for coaches like Lincoln Riley and coaches like Dabo Swinney and Nick Saban and guys like that. Yeah, I think right now, if you look at what was done in this manner, Lincoln Riley also is young too. Like the Brian Kelly thing's weird to me in that he's 60 years old, where, like as I said, he's like
Right.
not far from retirement potentially. Lincoln Riley, I always thought his next job would be NFL. And I know I was listening to the Petros and Money show earlier today. I had to tune into them to hear their opinion. And Petros was kind of saying, well, we got our dream hire and he'll be the Cowboys coach in 3 or 4 years, like kind of joking. But there is some validity to that, where he's young enough that even USC might not be his be all end all. Who's to say
Sure.
he doesn't go NFL? But in college now, USC finally has brought in a coach with high credentials that's respected in the recruiting world, that's also respected in the world of day-to-day X's and O's winning football games. And like, I almost feel like now, I can't say definitively that Lincoln Riley's going to win a national title, but I would feel pretty comfortable saying he's going to be in semifinals. He's going to
Yeah.
be in quarterfinals. He's going to be, you and I, probably going to be going to some USC home games when they're a 5 through 8 seed in the playoff. He'll be in those type of games almost every year. And that's the difference between USC before Lincoln Riley and USC after Lincoln Riley, is just the matter of USC now is a true player. And if Mario Cristobal stays at Oregon, and I'd love to have him at Miami, who would have thought the news that my Notre Dame's coach would be gone today and Miami still has Manny Diaz? But overall, Mario Cristobal had the West Coast at his disposal because the lack of USC
Right.
when recruiting. That's going to change. Now, Cristobal will still get his. He'll still beat USC for some guys, but he's not going to beat them for as many players. And let's be real, he's now going to fear what USC is on the recruiting trail, where before, if he didn't land a top recruit, it was almost the recruit was to blame and not anything else. It was just, well, it was his fault. I didn't lose him because of anything I did. Now he's going to have to battle, and they're bringing in Alex Grinch. I saw they're bringing in their football operations guy. And most importantly, and this is where, for Notre Dame's sake, I feel like it will hurt them the most, is a lot of fans don't realize this stuff. Us diehards do. Lincoln Riley brought his strength coach from Oklahoma. Those guys are almost every bit as important as the head coach, because there's a lot of times where the head coaches and assistants cannot be around the players, and the strength coach are the only guys around them. And at Notre Dame, the biggest thing that Brian Kelly did when he went 4-8 in 2016 was he got rid of the guy who was the best man in his wedding, who was his strength coach, and brought in Matt Bayless, and then actually brought in an assistant strength coach who's now the head strength coach at Bama. So he completely revamped their entire strength program. And what's Brian Kelly's record since he's done that after November in the regular season? 17-0. He's not lost a November game his whole time at Notre Dame. And then last year, of course, they played a couple December games. That's a huge asset, and that's one thing that Notre Dame will almost definitely lose in this switch. But for Oklahoma, that's going to be a big deal for them, is who do they replace Riley with, and the strength coach, the continuity guys. That's where USC is going to be at a huge advantage, because Riley pretty much handpicked his most important assets. And I listened to his press conference today. He said there were no agreements with them on a contract yet. I just looked at these four guys and said, I'm flying out tomorrow at 6 a.m. Are you going to be there? And they were all there at 5:40 a.m. ready to go. And that shows the importance of those staff members to Riley. And yeah, I think for USC now, your basement has just completely went up like 35 floors in terms of where your basement is. You know, if you're in a 50-story building, your basement under Clay Helton was in the bottom 20 stories. It was never in the bottom 10, but it was certainly...
Yeah, it felt like it was in the third garage, parking garage level.
But now you guys, your basement is probably like the 10, like the out of a 50-floor building, you're in that top 10 is still your basement. And that's a huge significance.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. I Lincoln Riley, by the way, weird fact, he's the third Texas Tech quarterback to be hired in the last 3 years here. Yeah,
that's right, because Cliff technically never coached.
For a minute and a half. And you have Graham Harrell, now you have Lincoln Riley. He has two pets named Boomer and Sooner. That's going to be a little bit awkward. They're going to have to be fighting on, I guess, now. And Ken, okay, I'm going to play the quick devil's advocate. Two things about him. I love everything about him. First, the cupboard wasn't bare when he took over. I alluded to that a little bit. You know, they were having a little bit of a down year for Oklahoma standards, but they weren't getting blown out by Oregon State at home bare like they were at USC, losing to BYU when really you played your best game of the season and still lost by a touchdown. That's what really – that's how bare the cupboards are at USC. And also, he's coming from a top five school all time that – pours resources into their football program. That's all they care about. Will USC do that? Remains to be seen. I mean, one thing I saw was the USC coaching staff 5-6 years ago when Clay Helton started was probably an $8 million a year combined total staff, with Clay Helton making four. I think Clay left probably making $4 or $5 million. USC was kind of being a little bit thrifty. Granted, they weren't making any money. No one was showing up to games. Now they pay him upwards of $12 million a year, $10, $12 million a year, and they're going to put another $5 to $7 million a year into their assistant coaching staff. They are showing that they're putting the resources into the staff. Now, are you going to be putting that staff on the road? Are you going to be upgrading your facilities? The McKay Center was a shining light in 2008, 2009, 2010 when it was completed. But now that place looks like a high school locker room compared to Alabama and Clemson and Oregon. Are you going to pump those resources into it? Just had a big renovation of the Collie. Now you need to fill those seats. So it'll be interesting to see those two things. I want to see how he reacts to those two things. The positives, he's the best coach in the Pac-12. Immediately, Kyle Whittingham may have something to say about that, but I'm gonna lean on Lincoln Riley there a little bit. He's in a down Pac-12. Look at the Pac-12 this year, and no one had a legitimate shot at making the playoff, no matter where Oregon was when that CFP ranking started. We knew that they weren't going to end up there, and really, you know, he's got the easiest road to even a 4-team playoff these next couple of years in the Power Five with the cachet that USC carries, with the recruits that he can bring in, and with the strength of him of his coaching. He's really got a pretty great path there. So I'm really, really excited. As I said, there were home run hires. Fickle, Aranda, Campbell. This was a grand slam, bottom of the ninth, game seven World Series hire. And you just don't see those. And this, let's bring it back to a larger point too. Is this the biggest / craziest coaching carousel you've ever seen? Florida, yes. 1-08, yeah. USC, 1-03, LSU, 1-19, Oklahoma, 1-2002. Within the last 20 years, there have been, LSU is 3, Florida's 5, 6, 7, 8 national championships won by all these schools that all had openings at the same exact time for all intents and purposes.
Within
Notre
a day.
Dame is up there. They've been in the playoffs. Yeah. It's insane.
Yeah, within one day. I mean, technically between Saturday to Monday, so 2 days, we've seen these openings at all those schools that have transpired. And look, I'm with you in that the USC cupboard is more bare than what the Oklahoma cupboard was when he took over. He was also an assistant coach for that Oklahoma team too. So it was already his verbiage, his play calling, his way of doing offense. But at USC, we know this, it's not going to be that hard to at least become a good Pac-12 team. That's the main difference. Is if USC had even a good coach this year, and we've seen it with Clay Helton, our thing was always he loses all the out-of-conference games, but then in conference is when he gets hot. It's not that hard or that inconceivable to go 7-2 in the Pac-12. And I think with Lincoln Riley now, that's kind of where you're headed. You know, the more challenge will be when you play Notre Dame out of conference, when you play LSU with Brian Kelly in a couple years ago in Vegas, or in a couple years, that will be a tougher one. When you play Alabama out of conference, when you have BYU out of conference, those games are seemingly the ones USC lately has just been throwing the towel in because they've had the second best coach in those games. But against a lot of the Pac-12 programs, I mean, Lincoln Riley with a USC team that's going through a slight transition. Are you afraid of Jed Fish? No. Are you afraid of Herm Edwards or Antonio Pierce, if they're even at Arizona State, or whoever replaces them?
Keeping him this year.
Well, then in that case, no. Are you afraid of Carl Durrell at Colorado? No. Chip Kelly's done a nice job this year, but let's be real. Are you afraid of him? I think you can respect him as a coach, but you're not afraid that you're just going to give away a UCLA game every year? The answer is no. And then Utah is the one team, in my opinion, because they're so good up front and they're so well coached, that might be the one program in the South that Lincoln Riley is going to have to look at your line play and say, I need to get a lot better, because that might be our biggest challenge. It's not going to be those other four programs at this moment. And that's the big issue. Is USC right now, always skilled guys, quarterbacks are generally fine. I do think they need to improve on the secondary. They haven't had great secondary players recently, but on the lines is really where they've struggled. And I know they've had like players that get drafted high, but it's always a one-off. It's like one offensive lineman or one D lineman. It's never a group of those guys. And that's where USC is going to have to get better. And if you remember under Pete Carroll, where did USC dominate everybody? It was always on the lines. And right. No matter who you are in any level of football, if you're going to go and compete for national championships, you're going to need to produce linemen on both sides. And so that will be the number one challenge. But again, the transfer portal, like Jarrett Patterson, I just said, who might come back to Notre Dame as a fifth-year captain, he's from Laguna Hills. He's from Orange County. Who's to say he doesn't look at the situation and say, I can go play for Lincoln Riley at USC. I'm close to home, and I can start my fifth year at SC. It's possible. I'm not saying it will happen, but it's at least possible. I would be surprised if Lincoln Riley doesn't convince two or three linemen offensively and defensively total that are high-end players to come in and play immediately.
Yeah. It's going to be, I mean, you're going to see a turnaround quickly. You're going to see some decommits. You're going to see, you know, I mean, USC during this moribund period was still bringing in big names. They still have Jackson Dart at quarterback, which I think is going to be great. I think you're going to see Keaton Slovis in the transfer portal as well. I mean, you're going to see some guys at USC that are saying, hey, this isn't Clay Helton's team anymore. You know, we're going to have to make some room. We're going to go and play at Indiana or Purdue or Vandy and get some playing time, because we didn't belong here. And we got brought in by a guy that, you know, was kind of searching in the dark. So, well, it's crazy. The craziness isn't over. We're doing this podcast. Oklahoma and Notre Dame don't have coaches right now.
Right.
And those are, you know, like we said, if we're talking top five programs, and I said 1 through 5, that's 5 and 3 or 2 or 2 and 4. Really.
Right.
I mean, to see three of the top four traditional powerhouse schools change and one coach to go to another. And I mean, LSU probably, you know, it's tough because they've in the 2000s, they're a top 10 team for sure. With 3 national championships, so they're a powerhouse as well. So I think in the 2000s, you would say that, you know, Notre Dame being a top 5 program still, LSU's right outside of that, and that's another power shift. So it's really, really going to be a crazy offseason. We'll see if any of the NFL throws into it. But I will say, for both USC and LSU, they didn't fumble the bag. They fired their coaches early. They didn't make the midseason hire of an assistant coach. They knew they had to swing for the fences, and they both hit home runs. And it's really, really big for both of them. It'll be now it's up to Oklahoma and Notre Dame. Do you think that those programs must not have known, though, right? Because they kind of have to start their search at square one, right?
Exactly. I think that's very true. No, I think, again, the same agent running both of these shows, it does show. And the fact that you have Trace Armstrong that was negotiating this and working back channels, it does show the power of a good agent. And it shows the power of being able to negotiate your terms, dictate. And let's be real. And this is what they talked about on, this is a local LA show if you're listening to this and you don't know who they are, but Petros and Money's like the best sports radio show out here. I listened to them earlier. And like they said, it didn't matter what the negotiations were. As soon as Lincoln Riley showed he had interest, he held all the bargaining chips in that battle. Sure. USC at that point, all they needed to know is their interest. And then at that point, as soon as as soon as it's a yes, Lincoln Riley could have said, I need three private jets. They would have probably got it for him. Brian Kelly might tell them. Like, I don't know if you saw the stuff that USC gave up. Like, they bought both of Lincoln Riley's
bought his
houses.
House at bought two houses at $1,500,000 over asking. They got the Zillow estimate, apparently. Unlimited PJ use. What else did they get? $6 million house in LA that he gets bought on top of his, what is it, 10-year, $110 million?
Yes. And that's not even including incentives. And that's what, you know, like if he ends up going top 10 or like these coaches come up with crazy clauses for, you know, anytime you finish in the top five, if you make a playoff.
Right.
And frankly, the coaches that are going to be really good for that, there's a lot of coaches that have playoff in their contract where it probably didn't say 4-team playoff. And then when it goes to 12, those coaches are going to be cashing in that one every year. You know, like you can just be printing that and checking it off if you're like any of the top five programs. But yeah, I think overall it just shows the power that these coaches and these agents have. The buyouts never go down, even though the buyouts make no sense for any school. You know why? Because the same agent that is going to give his client the Iowa job is the same agent that's going to give his client an Alabama job and is going to tell his client to go to USC. And these schools don't want to get stuck with pissing off an agent and having it cost them the next great coach. And so all of them bend over backwards. And for Brian Kelly, I mean, the last thing I'll say is he gave Notre Dame 12 great years. He led them to a national championship game. He led them to three undefeated regular seasons, two playoff berths, potentially a third playoff berth in a week, as weird as that sounds.
Crazy.
And if you would have told me before he got there, here's his next 12 years, I would have wondered about the 4-8 season. I would have wondered why he's leaving right now, but there's no way I couldn't have not signed up for what he did for
sure.
Those 12 years. It's disappointing he left. I was just talking to people yesterday saying the one thing Notre Dame has going right now that I don't envy at all these other programs is the fact that there's stability across the board and they're not losing their coach. And then less than 24 hours later, they're right there where Oklahoma is. But I'll say this, it's good to be where Oklahoma and Notre Dame are right now. And even though you just lost your coach, those are both very attractive jobs. And for Notre Dame in particular, when Charlie Weiss left, Brian Kelly had to build them up far worse than where they're at now. When Tyrone Willingham took over from Davey, it was far worse. When Davey took over for Holtz, it was pretty good, but Holtz those last couple years wasn't quite what he was in the 80s and the early to mid-90s. So this is the best shape the program has been in Brian Kelly's entire 12 years there, which is also why I'm surprised he's leaving. But whoever takes over next, as I said, they're going to be walking into, unless there's 15 or 20 transfers, and that would change everything, or their recruiting falls apart. Notre Dame's next two recruiting classes look to be two of Brian Kelly's best. Their team on talent looks to be two of their best the next couple years. There's a lot of bright future. Hopefully, though, in the next month, and I guess the next 48 hours, you would think, the stability side comes through, and they don't make the mistake of knocking their program back 3 years, where right now they are truly in a position where they could be in the next two playoffs if they get the right hire.
Yeah, and you know, we'll close out with this, but it feels like, what was it, maybe 4 or 5 years ago in the NFL, where it just decided that every quarterback that was worth his salt, and some that even weren't, Kirk Cousins, became the highest paid quarterback, right? Everyone went through it. I maybe even started with Stafford, but Stafford to Cousins to Rodgers until, you know, Rodgers' next contract to Russell Wilson to Brady, blah, blah, blah. And it becomes the numbers go from, it's crazy. You know, it's actually funny. Another analogy would be Corey Seager signing with the Rangers, 10 years, 325. Remember 13 years, 252 in 2004? We're like, that's the craziest contract of all time from Alex Rodriguez to the Rangers. And now that's just not even news making. 10 years, 325. You got guys making 13, 430 for a guy like Trout. But for these coaches, the numbers, I mean, by the end of this coaching carousel, Nick Saban's going to be the 10th highest paid coach.
Well,
He's
that's
gonna
the
win six national
I was
championships.
just gonna say, and I thought it was so funny is there are people that talk about like what is Nick Saban worth or like I got a text
Twenty
earlier
million.
from a friend
Twenty
saying,
million dollars.
oh my God, I think technically it's probably closer to 40 or 50 if you just break down the dynamic of what he's done. I mean, there were
Right.
like NBA small forwards and as you said, baseball number three starting pitchers that get paid like close to triple of what Nick Saban makes.
Scherzer just went 3 years, $130 million for the Mets, $42 million a year. And throughout those 3 years, the Nats are paying him $15 million a year. He's making $60 million a year
And
almost.
it's all guaranteed the same way these coaches now have it.
Right.
Yeah, so when you look at a guy like Saban or Ryan Day, for instance, who now is like the third highest paid coach in his own division with the Mel Tucker and the James Franklin boost, I think right now if you're Nick Saban, and he could probably go into the Alabama office, hand out a blank check and go, "What number do you think I'm worth?" And just laugh at what they toss his way. Because if they
Do you
go
remember?
anywhere
Not
under
even
30,
it,
it's
3 or 4 years ago, it was like he might take the Texas job because he needs to pay off his house and blah blah blah. You know, like they can give him four more million dollars, and it's like now he could walk into Texas and say $30 million a year,
well,
and
Kelly's
they wouldn't even bat an eye. It was Michael Jordan was the same in LeBron during their heights. There was no amount of money that could capture what they were worth to the NBA was printing money on the back of those two guys. Alabama's printing money on the back of Nick Saban right now. And you're right, it could be $40 million and it would still make sense for any school to do it.
Yeah, Saban, and I mean, Ryan Day hasn't won a title, but he certainly is worth, you would think, as much as a Harbaugh or a Mel Tucker or a Franklin. So yeah,
Right.
I think it's interesting. It shows you the big power there is in college football. Good thing for NIL and especially for Lincoln Riley. And don't think he didn't consider the NIL in the move to LA because
Oh man.
USC, maybe they didn't quite do the dirty things that some teams in the South will do to get recruits, but now with NIL, there's not many places more attractive than Los Angeles, California, for an 18 to 22 year old to sort of build a brand. So I think that was a big decision. And also, Riley's young, being 38 years old, that's a nice place to live in LA as a 38 year old and like kind
Jeez.
of be able to figure things out. Not to say you can't live nice in all these other college towns, you certainly could, but I'm sure for Lincoln Riley, I bet after he lost Bedlam, he probably had a little sigh of relief going, "Okay, now I can actually consider this job technically and make this happen." Because I think if he was still in the playoff mix there, I don't think he would have left. Obviously, Brian Kelly's proven otherwise. But generally speaking, I think Riley would have stuck with them. But that kind of gave him the chance to go, "It's now or never."
Yeah, amazing. Amazing. I mean, crazy. I'm so excited to see where all this nets out, but obviously I actually put down my deposit for USC season tickets today, something I've been wanting to do for probably the last 4 or 5 years, but refused to give that school money when they didn't deserve it for what they were doing on the football field. They finally deserve it now. Prices are all going to be jacked up, I'm sure, but I'm excited to support old USC. So Kent, let's finish it there. We opened up with a sad Notre Dame fight song. Let's finish out with USC's triumphant fight song. Fight on to victory.